I think what you're talking about is this idea, this concept we call cheshbon hanefesh, which is reflection and taking stock of where we're up to, our values, how well we're doing, and applying them, and so on. There is a concept, by the way, of doing it every day. Sort of at the end of the day, you reflect for a few minutes of the day gone by, once a week for the week, once a month for the month. But it's not with the same emphasis, and the reason is very simple. The truth is, we are a people. We are human beings that we're supposed to live a life of meaning and godliness. And we are actually taught not to spend so much time self-reflecting, because although it's critical for growth, one cannot really grow or improve or fix, for that matter, if you don't actually know where you're up to.
You are listening to the JP Show,
where we discuss the issues you care about from a Jewish perspective.
I am Rabbi G.
I am Rabbi Levi.
And we hope you enjoy this episode.
And another week of the JP Show. Welcome, everyone. Hello, Rabbi Levi.
It's not just another week. It's a special week this week.
Oh, a special week. Okay.
So it's the... I can see something
brewing here.
Yep. We've entered into the high holiday season. People think it starts in Rosh Hashanah. It's actually not true. It starts a month before. We're given a very special month called Elul, which is an opportunity to prepare for the new year. It's a time of closeness between us and God. The analogy is given, it's like the king is in the field. Hashem is very accessible, very available. And it's up to us to use this amazing opportunity. So there's a lot happening at Bina, that's for sure.
The notice boards are overflowing.
Yeah, and so is the room, actually. We just had a packed room of people learning right at the beginning of Elul, and it's only going to continue and get better and bigger. So come and join.
Yep, we've got to take the opportunity, this special month. So
it's the month primarily of, I'm not actually sure what word to use, change, repentance, return. All these words mean something else, or they're sort of they're along the same line. But it's really a time of introspection, of taking on new resolutions for the new year, to really dig deep into ourselves and to you know, figure out where we're holding in life and what we're doing well, what we're not doing well. So this is the month to do it. So let's actually start with, why only one month? Meaning, wouldn't that be a good idea to do that every day of the year, to have introspection and to really, you know, to think about ourselves and where we're holding and what we're doing well, what we're not doing well?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think what you're talking about is this idea, this concept we call cheshbon hanefesh, which is reflection and taking stock of where we're up to, our values, how well we're doing, and applying them, and so on. There is a concept, by the way, of doing it every day. Sort of at the end of the day, you reflect for a few minutes of the day gone by, once a week for the week, once a month for the month. But it's not with the same emphasis, and the reason is very simple. The truth is, we are a people. We are human beings that we're supposed to live a life of meaning and godliness, and we are actually taught not to spend so much time self-reflecting, because although it's critical for growth, one cannot really grow or improve or fix, for that matter, if you don't actually know where you're up to. And by the way, just to insert there, in the parentheses, taking stock doesn't only mean thinking about all the bad things and the failures that we experience, actually thinking about what is working.
Yeah.
That's important, because it gives us a whole picture of where we are. Having said that, when we do it too often and too much, we become a little bit self-absorbed and we don't actually get to do what we're supposed to be doing. The analogy is given for a businessman. Now, as everyone knows, business is not my area of expertise, but this is a simple fact which I understand and I think is correct. It's brought down in very holy sources, actually, this analogy. And that is stock-taking and re-strategizing and reflecting and all that kind of stuff is really important. It's like a review, assessment, and all that kind of stuff. They do that in business. But if they did it every day, all year, there wouldn't be any business happening and there wouldn't be any money made. So yes, it's a very good thing to designate a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, once in a while, to do that, but not every day. But the month that we can do that, which comes with, and I guess this is different to the business analogy. The business analogy is just you pick a time that's convenient for everyone to meet, or whatever, the time that everyone can make it. In Judaism, it's not like that. In spirituality, we have a month to do it, specifically the month of Elul, because there's a special energy in the month of Elul. In other words, the energy is that God is with us. As you said, he's a king in the field. He's accessible. We can talk to him. We can connect with him in an easier way. And therefore, it makes the whole process of reflection, regret even in some cases, and resolve, and the strategy to becoming different and returning, repenting, reconnecting, whatever the term is, all known in Judaism as tshuva, it becomes much, much simpler, much easier.
Mm.
It's hard work, but the opportunity is much greater in this month.
So why are people resistant to change? Because I think we could probably divide this into two different types of people. Some people don't realize they need to change. And that, I think, is probably like an illness of some sort. I mean, any normal person looks at themselves, at least I could talk for myself. I don't know, maybe I'm just projecting, but I'm a very flawed person. There's a lot of things I need to work on. So I know that I need a change. I mean, I don't have to actually spend too much time thinking about it. But we're very resistant to it, and it doesn't usually happen. Actually, most people don't. I mean, maybe people do, but many people struggle to actually change. If someone has an anger problem, a personality problem, in whatever area, it's a spiritual problem, it could be a problem in your relationship, which you know is your problem, and if you would just fix it and stop talking like that or stop doing that, things would be a lot better. So we're talking about someone who's healthy. They're acknowledging that they need to change. They're acknowledging their flaws. They're not narcissistic. They're not totally oblivious to their flaws. Why is it so hard?
So I think it's three, maybe four answers to that question. First of all, in order to change, you do have to do a cheshbon. You have to reflect. And reflecting is confronting. You said only a very few people think they don't have to change. I think that's true. It's not entirely true. Because at some level, we're all a bit like that. We actually don't want to. We're a bit insecure. It's hard to confront ourselves.
Mm.
When we confront ourselves honestly, yes, we celebrate things we've done well, but also we feel uncomfortable about the things that we haven't done well. And that's hard because what people often do is they define themselves by their failures and therefore want to ignore them or over-dramatize them, one of the two. In other words, like, I'm nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. Or they just don't want to really go there. Two hard baskets. That could be one thing. So the change comes with reflection. That's really important. Secondly, change is hard work. People don't like hard work. Or they're not sure it's going to work. They're scared of failure. There's a lot of modern research done by a woman called Carol Dweck. She actually talks about more in the area of education, I think primary school kids. And she was the one who did tremendous work on the whole idea of growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, right? A lot of people some people have growth mindset in all areas of life, but just sort of naturally. Some people don't. A lot of people don't. They have a fixed mindset. They just rather be where they are.
Mm.
Part of the reason she explains is because people are scared to fail. In order to grow, you have to be ready to fail and to acknowledge failure, right? Take risks. Take risks means confronting the past and also knowing that the stuff I explore going forward might not work 100%.
That's right.
And that's okay, because we are people of failure. God created us as human beings. Human beings fail. We try, we grow, we obviously don't look for failure, but we do fail. We are not perfect human beings, right? And I think the third reason is that people don't know how to change. They don't know the strategy. It just becomes too overwhelming. Like, you're kidding, you think I'm going to become a saint overnight? Like, anger problem, you said anger problem. So I have an anger problem, so I get angry seven times a day. What do you think? All of a sudden I'm going to stop? All of a sudden I'm going to stop gossiping? All of a sudden I'm going to stop indulging in food? All of a sudden I'm going to, take on a mitzvah, which I've never done, but all of a sudden you're going to tell me I must do it every day? It just, people don't know what to do with it. It's very overwhelming.
Hmm. It's a very interesting point you made about people not wanting to move forward, and not wanting to take risks. I think that's true in general. People don't like change in any part of life, actually, not only in our personal spiritual life. Like, I mean, you even find that in the Torah, you find that the Jewish people didn't want to leave Egypt. I mean, there was terrible persecution on all levels, terrible things we learn about. And yet the desert was I guess the unknown for people is worse than a current terrible situation.
You know where you are now. You've adapted to it in whatever way. It might be painful, but you've kind of learned to live with it. You've made peace with it, let's say.
Mm.
And this is who you are and finish. Why should I change? Why rock the boat?
Right. So any change, even in the good direction,
is going to be
rocking the boat.
It's fundamental to Judaism. I mean, I'm not just talking about Carol Dweck's research, which is really good, but from a Jewish point of view, it's fundamental to Judaism, critical to Judaism, that we grow. And growth means changing. In fact, that's probably the most important thing I'd say in terms of being a human being, to grow.
So what do you say to someone who last year in the month of Elul was very inspired and came Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and they went to shul and they heard an amazing, inspirational speech, a sermon, and they decided, you know what, I'm going to take on this thing for this year. I'm going to change this. I'm going to become a better person, a better Jew. And they were all fired up and it lasted for 3 months. And then they're back to where they started. Or maybe they're even worse off when they started. I think sometimes when you go forward and you go backwards, you actually fall harder.
Yes and no. I mean, so let's unpack that. That's actually quite a complicated question. So first of all, what does change look like?
Mm.
How do I make it sustain? There's a very good book out. In fact, I'm going to address it. I'm doing a home shiur next week on Wednesday night in Dover Heights. Everyone's welcome. It's called Developing Healthy Habits or Successful Habits. I've forgotten myself the exact term, the exact heading.
Yeah.
There is a book that was published in the last number of years called Atomic Habits. Very, very good. Not everything I agree with, but most of it is very, very solid, particularly strategically, right? So first of all, how do you define change? What does change mean?
Mm.
So on the one hand, change means, I'll tell you why it's so important to understand what change means, because you have to strategize to make change effective, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, if you want to make change effective, you also first have to know, before you develop a strategy, you have to know what change is.
Yeah.
In a Jewish sense, change means to grow in your character traits, grow spiritually, grow in your connection to God, but to grow in a way where, on the one hand, it's reasonable expectations. In other words, you don't take upon yourself just because you inspired something that you know is not going to work. But it does push your boundaries. You have to become a little bit uncomfortable. That's what growth is. In other words, any growth a person does is good. I'll give you an example. So let's say someone says, I love to help people, so in the coming year, I'm going to help people an hour more a week. That's beautiful. That's excellent, but it's not real growth.
Hmm.
Why don't you do that too, but it's not real growth. And the reason why it's not real growth is because you haven't gone out of your comfort zone. You haven't gone into areas where you feel uncomfortable, right? And by the way, in Judaism, this could work either way. So, for example, someone can be a very, very good person, loving people, helping people, but very uncomfortable with the sort of godly part of the Torah, like, you know, putting on tefillin or putting up a mezuzah, whatever the case is. And the opposite can be true as well. Someone can be very into the mitzvah that we call between man and God, loves the shul, loves tefillin, loves Shabbos, loves all these things, but doesn't want to change in the areas of interpersonal relationships because it's just too hard for them. It's not the area that they're used to, right? Talk to me about, davening harder, davening a bit more with intention. Yeah, I'm in. Talk to me about being nicer to my neighbor. No, I'm not so in. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Or helping someone out. That's not my thing, right? Mm. Or being honest. That's not my thing. So you got to be careful. So really, real growth is picking an area where, I mean, yeah, for sure. Nurture the area of your comfort. Nurture the things you do well. Do more of them. That's great. But real growth is to pick something that's actually a little hard. But pick it in a way so it pushes your boundaries, but it's reasonable, right? Now, that's an important thing to understand because, first of all, you know what to change in. And second of all, how to change. In other words, you've got to take one step at a time. It's got to be bite sizes. You can't become a tzaddik, as we say, overnight in any area of life. It doesn't work like that, right? You've got to strategize, like how you're going to set yourself up for success, What's the best way to go about it? Who do you have to tell about it? Who can you get to support you? Who can you get to remind you? I'm saying this very briefly. Really, it's a longer discussion. But one of the triggers, for example, if you want to get angry less, first of all, I would never say to someone who gets angry a lot to never get angry. It's just not going to work. Right? Yeah, in theory, he's committed enough to get angry because he knows it's an important thing. But maybe say, you know, you get angry like 25 times a week, get angry 15 times a week instead, or 20 times a week, right? And that's a huge success. We don't look at it like that, but it is, because it's growth. It's growth. But you also have to reflect, like, what is it that triggers you? Like, what makes you angry? Why do you become angry so much? What's your perspective maybe that makes you angry? Is it an ego issue? Is it a sensitive issue? And also, like, what time of the day do you become more angry? Is it like when your kids come home from school? Like, do you get angry more then? Or like, is it with who? Like, who do you get angry most with and why? What triggers you? I once told someone, you know, it could be that you get angry when you come home because you're very hungry. Well, I heard this from someone once. It's not my own thing, but Rabbi Week used to say that men, when they come home from work, before they come into the house, they should have an apple in their briefcase and eat it.
Right.
So it's coming, you'll be a little calmer. So all these things are strategies, right? They're all. Now, that was a long way of getting to answer your question. So you said, but how about if they didn't succeed? So first of all, what do you mean succeed? After we define the word change, we have to define the word success. If you took upon yourself, let's say, to be nicer to a certain person, or you took upon yourself to be less jealous or whatever the case is, and you did it for 3 months and then you dropped it, it was too hard, you have succeeded. It's 3 months more than you did it last year. Because we have a principle in Judaism that every mitzvah you do, every bad thing you stay away from is eternal and it exists in its own right. You don't undermine success by failing. The success you had, you had. Now this year, maybe you've got to try keep it for at least 3.5 months. Maybe. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying everyone's different. But so you got to maybe say, okay, let's fine-tune the strategy. What happened? Like, why did I drop it after 3 months? That's part of the reflection. What took place? And what am I going to do next time that when that happens, I'm going to still soldier on. I'm going to still try and keep it for another month or whatever the case is, right? And sometimes it never worked altogether. So we try again. God doesn't mind if we keep trying. The main thing is we keep trying.
Right. And I think another important component to all of this is simcha, is joy. I think sometimes people associate change with struggle, and it is a struggle, that's true. And this time of year, especially with, like, you know, being scared and fearful and what's going to be this coming year and you know, all that type of stuff, which is true. It is a serious time of year. In fact, the Hebrew word for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is Yamim Noraim, which means like awesome days in the sense like almost fear, like trepidation. We speak about in Rosh Hashanah davening, we speak about it, even the angels tremble, and it's sort of like a very intense time. That doesn't mean that it's not a happy time, right? Is that correct? I think happiness is very important to change.
So I would say, first of all, happiness, it can be reflected in many ways. It doesn't mean, just because sometimes it's a serious time, it doesn't mean that you're not happy.
Yeah.
We find many sources with Rosh Hashanah that instruct us to be happy. It is correct. True that happiness, in an open way, comes out more on the festival of Sukkot.
Mm.
But it's not a sad time and it's not a scary time. It's a serious time. It's an urgent time, I would say.
Right.
Yeah, so there is a certain awesomeness about it. There's a certain focus about it, an earnest sort of fear, atmosphere about it, because change is a serious business. But we learn from the festival of Sukkot how you have to also apply real happiness to the whole program, right?
Yeah.
If I could just quickly say, like, I've given a whole series on this, but I like to look at the whole month of Tishrei as actually a formula.
Right.
So Elul is a time where we reflect and we decide what we need to change in, and like we feel uncomfortable about some of the mistakes that we made and we take responsibility for them. But then you have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. And I think if you break it down very briefly, it works like this. Rosh Hashanah is more the resolve. If you notice in the prayers of Rosh Hashanah, we don't talk about details. Mm. We don't even confess. We do that on Yom Kippur, right? So Rosh Hashanah is more the resolve. I am going to make this a better year. I'm going to be more connected to God this year, right? Yom Kippur is more about the plan, about the specifics, the details, like what am I going to do, the things we just spoke about, like what's the strategy? Because Yom Kippur is very detail-oriented, if you see from our prayers, right? But then Sukkot is an equally important part of the equation. It's about celebrating your success, celebrating the opportunity to change, understanding the love of God that He wants us. He's not beating Asav, he's not screaming at us, he's saying, please, I'm giving you another opportunity, come closer. I'm giving you an opportunity, even though you failed 70 million times, but I'm giving you an opportunity to do it again. We need to celebrate that connection and celebrate that opportunity and celebrate the confidence that we have that it will work out.
Yeah. Amazing. So it's a special month. Everyone should tap into the opportunity. There's a lot going on here. If you live in Sydney and you're interested in joining, just email us, contact us, and we'll tell you what's going on for all.
Actually, if you don't live in Sydney, there's a lot online, so you can also contact us.
That's also true. That's right. For all ages, all backgrounds, all levels.
Yeah.
And just everyone in their own way, in their own time, just grow and connect and use this incredible month. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
All the best, everyone. See you next week.